Welcome to the special episode of I'm In, the Institute of Hospitality's official podcast hosted by me, Phil Street, FIH. It's International Women's Day, and so to celebrate this wonderful date in the calendar, we thought it would be interesting to look at the challenges and opportunities that women face in the workforce in 2024. To help me with this, I was joined by Lizzie Grundy, AIH, Kat Price, MIH, and Tracy Fairclough, FIH. This discussion is epic from the outset, and so a huge thank you to all three of them for really bringing the thunder to the conversation. Don't forget, if you want to feature on an episode of the show, just reach out to me at phil.street@instituteofhospitality.org. But for now, let's head to the conversation. Hello, and welcome to the next episode of I'm In, the Institute of Hospitality's official podcast, hosted by me, Phil Street, FIH. Today, we're going to do a special, and it's special because we find ourselves on International Women's Day. So we thought it would be a good idea to do a special around the women of our membership. To help me do this, I'm once again joined by three more awesome human beings who are all very kindly giving up their time to chat to us today. So first up, we have Tracy Fairclough, who is Managing Director at, now, is it TAF or TAF?
You can call it what you like. TAF, if it rolls off the tongue, is really easy. You don't have to say the catering consultancy, but that's what I do.
Very good. Yes, TAF, Catering Consultancy Limited. How are you?
I'm really well, thanks, Phil. Really well. Thanks for inviting me along. It's fun to be a part of this.
Good stuff. Yeah, well, you've actually done a bit of a body of work around this kind of subject before, so I am sure we will get into that in the fullness of discussion. Very interested to kind of hear your findings from that. But where do we find you today? Where are you recording from?
So I'm recording from Surrey. It's a little bit foggy, a little bit misty, but yeah, all good.
Great stuff. Well, you're very, very welcome. And thank you for joining us today. Next up, we have Kat Price, who is a freelance journalist based in Switzerland and also ex-West End legend.
Oh, stop it. You have to drop that in every time, don't you?
Every time, every time. For context, just explain.
For context, Phil and I actually met when we were doing the Springboard pantomime.
Yeah.
Which was done at the Leicester Square Theatre, so we have both tread the boards in the West End.
Phil's got a lovely singing voice. I'm sure he'll be treating us to that later.
Maybe not on this podcast. But how are you anyway? How's life?
I'm great. I'm really good, thanks. Well, how are you?
Yes, great. Thank you for asking. And where in Switzerland are you?
I'm in Bern at the moment. And yeah, it's unfortunately can't see the mountains at the moment. But, you know, looking like we've got some snow up in the mountains. So yes, should be some good skiing soon, hopefully.
Isn't it approaching summer?
Yes. But, you know, welcome to climate change, eh?
Yeah, well, I mentioned that you're a freelance journalist as well as being a West End legend. Just tell us a little bit about the kind of freelance stuff that you do.
Yeah, of course. So, I'm, as I said, a freelance journalist. I write about a lot of topics, but I worked for the Caterer magazine for about 6 years as a reporter and news editor. So hospitality is very much one of my specialisms and passions. And so, yeah, I also write for Hospitality Investor, obviously the Institute of Hospitality magazine, and I've also previously done bits for Hospitality and Catering News.
So not a lot then.
Keeping busy.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Well, you're very welcome, and thank you for joining us from Switzerland as well.
Thanks for having me.
And last but certainly not least, we have Lizzie Grundy, who is a graduate manager at the quite wonderful Penny Hill Park. Hi, Lizzie.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yes, good. You're obviously, for in case there is some background noise, we just have to make you all aware there might be some drilling, there might be some banging, but we'll do our best to edit around that in the final edit. But just in case you hear it, we'll do our best.
Thank you. Apologies.
I wanted to understand what a graduate manager does.
So my role at Penny Hill Park is part of the Exclusive Collection. I'm on a two-year programme, which is fully rotational. So I spend 2 years jumping between every single department in the hotel. There isn't a department I don't actually experience somewhere or another. I'm towards the end of it now. So I have such an amazing oversight of the property I work in and the company with her at the end that I kind of stay on in an assistant managerial role. And it's been amazing. Yeah, I can't imagine another situation where you would have such broad experience and exposure. So it's been eye-opening. Having worked in a hotel for a couple of years, but more front of house and food and beverage side, I've been amazed by what goes on kind of behind closed doors. So yeah, it's an interesting role. It's been really good.
I mean, not a bad training ground. I mean, Penny Hill Park is just fabulous.
Indeed, I agree. It's lovely. Doesn't get old.
No, absolutely not. And I actually thought when I read the job title graduate manager, I thought you were managing all of the graduates. That was the first thing I had.
Maybe
in my head.
One day.
Is that a thing now?
I mean, there is someone who kind of looks after us all, so maybe, I don't know what their job title technically is, but yeah, maybe one day, that'd be good.
Yeah, indeed. Great stuff. Well, yeah, thank you as well for joining us. Before we get into today's topic, always like to ask your reasons why you said I'm into the Institute of Hospitality. So I'm going to come back to you, Tracy, and why did you say I'm into the IOH?
Well, for starters, I have massive respect for the IOH and all the hospitality professionals in whatever realm. And it's wonderful because you're drawn from so many different backgrounds, as Kat said, you know, kind of publishing and editorial and PR. And then we've got Lizzie, who's on the graduate scheme. Then you've got people from hotels, catering, restaurants. And it's such a brilliant, brilliant industry. I've been in it kind of really for only about 15, 16 years. And I've jumped from a different sector. Yeah, no, well, I was in a different sector. I came in from marketing and advertising. Yeah, advertising. Right. So I worked for Saatchi's, WPP, and I made a complete switch just by chance. And I've loved it, never looked back. And I've got my own catering consultancy. And I believe I'm one of the only female-led catering consultants. So I know we're going to talk a bit more about women in general, but to actually link up and being as part of an organisation that's committed to a continual kind of professional development and learning initiatives is really wonderful. And if I can do anything to promote or inspire, then I'm in, basically.
Boom. Right on message. Fantastic. Kat, same to you. Why did you say, well, apart from probably constant badgering by Robert, but which is probably the vast majority of membership is the same. But why did you say I'm in?
I really don't feel like I can give as good an answer as Tracy. That was really fantastic. So I'm just going to say, I believe in community and working together, you know, with other people towards positive change.
I mean, what's not to love about that?
Yeah.
That's wicked. Yeah. And then finally to you, Lizzie. Yeah.
So I became a member of the Institute when I was at uni. My uni paid for my membership, so it was kind of just an added extra. And it was in my final year, kind of as we were coming out of COVID, that I kind of got fully involved with the Institute and understood like how useful it is and how much is out there. And it's just really good to be part of like a collective, especially when you're in industry and you're operational. You can kind of feel a bit lost and like disconnected from everyone else, and not everyone's on the same page. And I think it's so important now that our industry it's changing so quickly with time, just to have a body kind of overseeing everything and to be able to ask people questions. How are you dealing with this? How are you finding that? It just brings a really good sense of belonging. And it's also led me, I'm part of the Youth Council as well for the Institute. That's an amazing group of like young people who are at the start of their careers, just wanting to be like, what are we all doing? How can we help? It's been an amazing door opener for me personally.
Yeah, I love the fact that the Youth Council now exists. It's something that was brought in. And I think part of Robert's recruitment presentation really around why he should be given the job was centered around actually giving a voice to as many corners of the industry as possible. And, you know, at the end of the day, ideas come from so many different places, right? So we should be, you know, really getting behind kind of any voice really that's got some great ideas on how we can make things better.
Absolutely.
Yeah, good stuff. Everybody's nodding. Yeah. That's a good start. Yeah. Well, I suppose it's time to get into today's topic, which, you know, as a man, is quite an interesting topic to get into. And actually, before we kind of get into questions and all of that sort of thing, and I will probably come to you first, Tracy, anyway, because of the body of work that you've done. But actually, today's topic is all around exploring the challenges and opportunities that exist in today's workforce for women. But before we get into it, I did some research. My God, I do that occasionally. and that's really into the history of women in the workplace. So I'm gonna read this because there's quite a lot to get through. But I've kind of made a note of the headline points. I haven't memorized them all yet. But some of these actually blew my mind in terms of some of the things that over history women have had to deal with in the workplace or not in the workplace as it kind of transpires. So here we go. So this will be unsurprising, but pay has historically always been very low for women. The majority of middle and upper class women never undertook paid work. And this is actually going back to Victorian times that we're talking about here. What's deemed to be the professional services remained pretty much a closed option for years and years and years. So professional services being doctors, accountants, lawyers, that sort of thing. In 1913, a court declared that women were not persons, which what am I reading here? The First World War saw more women take up jobs allowing men to be conscripted, in many cases being paid less to do the same job that their male counterpart would have been doing. Post First World War, there was a recession, unsurprisingly, and unemployment benefit was brought in for the first time. Women were not allowed to claim unless they took up a domestic job. So the vast majority went back into domestic roles that they had before the war, which was obviously quite a massive regression for the, any kind of progress that had been made. In the Second World War, much the same happened as the first, with the addition of women also being conscripted into service at that time. With so many women in work, the government were then forced to support more childcare efforts on the back of that, because there was who's looking after the children, as it was back then. Despite all this, married women were still deemed dependents, and they should not go into the workforce post-war. Got to stay at home, you know, and be there for the husband, that kind of mentality. Post-war 1946 began a campaign for equal pay in some professions, mainly around civil service, but it wasn't until 1961 that women teachers achieved parity, and that was only one part of the civil service. In 1968, as depicted in a movie, Made in Dagenham, I don't know if you've seen it.
Brilliant film.
It's a really good movie. Mm-hmm. It started this kind of move towards trying to get some kind of parity in pay. It started branching out into other sectors, but despite some progress, women were still way short of parity across the board. In 1975, pay parity was still way off, but progress had been made, hitting 77% of what men were being paid at this time. Also in 1975, the Sex Discrimination Act came in, making it unlawful for an individual to be discriminated against in the workplace in relation to selection for a job, training, promotion, work practices, dismissal, or any other disadvantage such as sexual harassment because of their sex or marital status. These provisions are now actually make up part of the Equality Act 2010. And the number of women in work has risen from 52% in 1971 to 72% in 2021, which was the last available statistics that I could find on that matter. There's all manner of other stuff. I don't want all of the historical facts to dominate our discussion today, but suffice to say, this almost sounded draconian, actually, when I was reading some of this stuff. But I suppose from a pragmatic perspective, and this is very easy for me to say as a man, of course, looking at factual information, it does look that progress has been made. Mm. No doubt about it, but we've still got a long way to go. So I'm going to come to you, Tracy. You can take what you will of the facts that I've just kind of said from my own research, but what does your body of work also demonstrate? Because your body of work, I would suggest, is a lot more modern in its findings.
I think, you know, for starters, it's really interesting. You basically taking us all through this history. And I think actually the three of us, between Kat, Lizzie and I, we cover different generations. So it'll be really interesting to see what you guys also think of this. But I grew up in the 80s and my mum had to go out to work for various personal reasons. So I've never known a world where women, the woman that I aspired to most, went out to work. And she went into marketing. She did various jobs. She grafted hard. You know, we had childcare. She had to, you know, get babysitters. But I've never known a world without looking to a future where I would be working. So, you know, maybe I'm part of a generation where all of the things that you started off talking about are basically looking and thinking, oh, my God. So I've never known a world where women didn't work. It's really interesting because I did a body of work, as you mentioned, Phil, back in 2017, when the IOH asked me to be part of a Women in Hospitality panel. And back then, I interviewed 100 women, and they were drawn from, and I basically asked them a number of questions about what they were doing in hospitality, how they got there, what inspired them, what the features and benefits were of being in the industry. And these contained, you know, people in various roles, from contract catering, a Michelin star chef, a restaurateur, TV presenter, social media blogger, food critic. They're all very, very high profile people, some of these. But there was a good mixture of people drawn from hotels, contract catering. And basically back then, the shortage, so this is only 2017, right? The skills shortage was 65,000 in total. We are now facing today a skills shortage of 170,000 people. So those are the roles that need filling. And basically the Ordnance ONS have said that there are 83% more vacancies advertised than before. I've done a piece of research just now, as in this week, where I reached out to all the contract caterers I know. So that's 60 companies. And I said to them, one question is, I've said, what percentage of your workforce do you estimate to be women in hospitality? A third of those came back. So 20 companies came back. I literally had no time to ask them. And it's fascinating because basically we've had, let's see, 82% of contract caterers reported over 55% of people that work for them were women, which is phenomenal, because it was only something like 33% back in 2022. And I think there are more and more people now occupying those roles, which is really encouraging, despite the fact that we've got shortages in our industry. And I think, back to the point that you were making, Phil, is through circumstances, extreme circumstances, as in war. You mentioned World War One, women taking up jobs because the men were going out fighting, World War Two. They then also went to the front line as well. And then through circumstances like this, we've gone through a pandemic. I think maybe what you're saying is maybe we're going through another phase where women are, through the very nature of we've progressed to this stage, more and more people are entering hospitality. And maybe because there are more leaders there, you're seeing people aspire to what they could and should achieve.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose at the end of the day, right, I mean, coming back to the headline topic, which is about exploring challenges and opportunities, what you've just presented there, actually, on the face of it, seems like we live in a time where opportunity is good. The, you know, just the general opportunity to get into the workforce, make progress in the workforce, and, you know, continue to make progress in the workforce is there. But I mean, these are, I suppose, some fundamental basics, really, of what it's, I suppose, like to be an employee or to have your own business or whatever. Kat or Lizzie, either feel free to jump in and kind of comment on anything that you've heard so far in terms of your view on things to this point.
May I?
Please do.
I was just going to jump in because, yeah, what you've said so far has been really interesting. I just wanted to sort of take it on that little bit because I think, although maybe the sort of the stats have changed and the numbers have changed, I think it's really important that we recognise that the way that we work until probably 2020 hadn't really changed. You know, it was still, you know, very, you know, obviously hospitality has a huge range, but, you know, it's still very kind of Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, or in terms of hospitality shift work, that hasn't necessarily changed, even though we're now expecting people to, you know, we once had the sort of, but essentially, you know, half of a couple would be expected to stay at home and do those jobs. And now I think there's this attitude of, you know, you have to have it all, but you also have to do it all. And I think since 2020, that has changed in the sense that we're obviously now looking at more working from home. And having spoken to a lot of women over the last couple of weeks ahead of International Women's Day, I think the big word that came out for me was flexibility. And I think employees are really starting to think about being more flexible, thinking about work differently. How can we approach the way that we work differently? And how that benefits not just women, not just parents, but everybody.
Totally. Lizzie, anything to add into all of that? I mean, there wasn't a lot of information to digest there at all, was there?
I know, nothing to keep up with. I think it's fascinating how I think we're at a really pivotal point where we're seeing, even in operations where, you know, you do work shift work and you do kind of have to be on property, the change in like 4-day working weeks. I know a company in Oxford who they now, everyone is on a 4-day working week. It's chefs, it's restaurant managers, it's everyone, because everybody wants that flexibility. And I think it obviously starts with, you know, the people who work Monday to Friday. They can work from home, they can finish early, like have that responsibility and that flexibility. And I'm just so excited to see it filter through. Might take a while, but filter through to the operational people who it's so essential that you have to be there to provide your role. But how much flexibility can we have to enable things like women or older people to take on roles that they maybe wouldn't have been able to do before? So I think it's a really pivotal time, which is really exciting.
Yeah, I mean, the flexibility of it all is quite exciting, isn't it? Because I think it has been a very, and this is just a general statement, this is not, I suppose, a women-centric statement, but it has been a very, very rigid way of doing things. And, you know, so I suppose the world has had to evolve out of necessity. And we find ourselves in a time where, you just absolutely have to be more flexible. Otherwise, you're probably narrowing your pool of resources considerably because people need that flexibility in their lives now. Tracy, you have something to say.
Yeah, I do, because it's really interesting. Lizzie mentioned something about shift work, and I have been sitting down with clients. So I work in contract catering. So this is where big businesses will basically have different tiers of feeding people every day. So they may have a staff restaurant. They may have like free issue pantries for people that maybe go in at different times, and they'll have fine dining. And you're sitting there and you're looking at labor schedules that are still the same as they were pre-2020. And the thing about contract catering, mainly within the business and industry sector, is we used to work Monday to Friday. So as you were saying, Lizzie, if we're now, and I totally agree with you, shift work is so much better, because not only have you giving the opportunity for parents to look after their own children, but you're giving parents now the opportunity to look after their aging parents themselves. You're looking, you know, you're giving them the chance to look after their own mental well-being with perhaps an extended weekend, you know, with either the Friday or the Monday. But I just think there's not enough businesses, I think, really embracing this and making the most of it to fill the labour gap. Because if all these people from Lizzie upwards, you know, to the 50 pluses, all embracing this shift work and this ability, you know, wanting to be flexible, I think big business could really, you know, benefit, and hotels, if they just revised, you know, how they look at labour structures. And perhaps we wouldn't be reporting such vast numbers of shortages, because we'd be re-looking at using people at their peak times for corporate businesses, peak times themselves. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. Totally. I suppose it's almost having a consumer led mentality into, but actually your consumers in this case are your workforce. So, you know, what does the workforce need in their life? Okay, so they need X, Y, Z. So let's make sure that when we're designing our working patterns, that we are offering X, Y, Z. And you know, therefore, and actually big business plays a massive part in this, doesn't it? Because I think the small business on the street can make quick decisions and adapt very, very quickly to what they want to do, but alone probably can't make a massive change to the wider argument. But it's the big business that kind of need to get behind this as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much we could say about flexibility, isn't there?
I'm going to say, don't get me started on shift patterns, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I know. I agree. I think there's a whole piece around chefs. There's a massive piece around chefs, because because you just think this flexi working. So big hospitality, KSB Recruitment, recently reported that the number of chefs entering the industry has risen by a third since 2016, which is really promising. However, many are in part-time work. And you just think, you know, this is where, if we did more flexi working, we would be able to fill more gaps. And you just think, there aren't enough chefs in the industry. Yes, it's growing in terms of recruitment. Perhaps, Phil, you probably have a lot to say about that from your perspective. But you just think, well, you know, I just think when I did my survey, right, listen to this. This is only 7 years ago, is basically there were more chefs. There were only one in five women that were chefs. So of the 100 people that I interviewed, they reported only one in five were chefs. Only one in eight applicants for every chef role was a woman. So this is all in 7 years alone. I think this is quite interesting. I think we're almost in game-changing, era-changing territory. So, yeah.
What Absolutely. A time to be alive.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, at Exclusive, we have a Chef's Academy program. And even the intake that we've had from them over the past, if you look at it since it started a few years ago, you'd have an influx of female chefs applying, wanting to be chefs. And I just really hope we can hold on to them and ensure they stay and want to stay in a role they love and are really good at doing. I put it down partly to the fact that we have a female executive chef, which is the only one in the group. Mm-hmm. And I mean, she's a pastry chef, Sarah Flacken, she's amazing. And I think just having that strong female role model, which is like my entire thing about it, is having that person Me you can too. Look up to. Yeah. Just by having a female executive chef, how more attractive is that for chefs who want to apply who are female?
And it applies across Absolutely. The board, right? I was talking to Zoe Manker, the Edge Hotel School, recently, and she was telling me that so often the sort of the female hotel graduates are going to properties with really visible female leadership. That's important to me. 100%. Mm. To women to see people like them in leadership roles, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same for any kind of, you know, we're not here today to discuss diversity and inclusion. You know, it's the same principle as, you know, in order to be inspired into where do I believe I can get to, I need to be able to see somebody who looks like me or whatever, who acts like me in a position of power or, you know, importance or whatever you want to call it. And so that's really, really interesting to learn that, I mean, that's happening in front of our eyes, as you said, Tracy. You know, are we actually living in game-changing times with this? Because I think it's very easy, and I made a note of a line that came to my head when I was doing this research on the history. Like, history is there to show us where we've come from, right? It's not there necessarily to elicit an emotional response to say that's disgraceful, that's terrible, or whatever. We can't do anything about it. It's happened. you know, actually the only day that matters is today, and actually where are we right now, because that helps us figure out where we've still got to go. But it's also useful, I think, to look back and see where we've come from. So it's, I think in some of the statistics that you're reeling off in terms of where we are now, you know, one in five from a female perspective coming into a kitchen, to me, my optimistic mind says, what a wonderful opportunity we have there. Because, you know, really what we're looking to do here is to try and achieve parity or some degree of parity. We're never, ever going to get it 50-50%. On the other hand, you said that 55% of women are in the survey that you did, and okay, it was a snapshot in time, you know, 55% of the workforce are women. So I think the key thing about this is then, okay, that's fine from a pure 50-50 parity statistical perspective, but let's look up the chain a little bit, because I still think that's where there is some work to be done. And in fact, I might have some more research here. No, I don't, actually. That was a complete lie.
I can throw one out.
Go.
Apparently, women in hotel, tourism and leisure's most recent annual report showed that nearly one fifth of hospitality, travel and leisure businesses have only one woman on their board.
Really? Right.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So once again, my brain goes to opportunity. We've still got some way to go. Obviously, there's a challenge there. And for whatever reason, I suppose maybe this is a generational thing. I don't know. I don't want to be a generationarist. If that's the word. God, there's going to be a lot of editing on this one, isn't there? But, you know, mindsets change with each generation, right? In terms of this is the way it's always been and that's the way it always will be. So when you're trying to make a change, a positive change, any kind of change, it takes some quite almighty mindset shifts from the people who are, you know, existingly hold the power. And actually, I have found the research that I found, and this was around pay disparity. Actually, since they started introducing surveys around pay reporting, there has been an uptick in the gender pay gap was 17.3% in 2019. Again, this is the last time I could find statistics, which was down from 18.4% in 2017. So it's a small change, but it is a change. A consultancy specialising in gender balance produced a 2020 gender balance scorecard assessment for the top 20 UK companies of the FTSE 100, finding that there was a 39% increase in women in top teams compared to 2018. The report posed but did not conclusively answer the question as to whether this could be a result of actually now companies having to report on their pay. So I found that quite interesting, that maybe because now companies are being told that you have to report on this, now they don't want to be seen as falling behind, or, you know, not being progressive, or whatever that might look like.
One of the companies that I interviewed actually came back and offered a bit more information, and they said, I'm not going to say how big they were, but actually it's really interesting, because they said the percentage of highest earners that are female, 75%. So, you know, maybe that's women are speaking up a bit more. I don't know. You know, you don't know. I literally did a massive poll, asked one question. Everyone brilliantly came back. But, you know, all the figures that I'm getting back now, I think are really encouraging. I think, if I may, on what you're saying, and also what building on what Lizzie was saying, for me, I wouldn't have opened my catering consultancy if I hadn't had female mentors. And I've had female mentors, and those female mentors have either been those in senior positions. I worked in Elior. There was an amazing lady who recently became a fellow of the Institute at the same time as me, who I literally used to look up to. Didn't really used to say very much, because she used to come into the office, and she was a member of the senior leadership team back then. And I just used to watch her, as you do, and get your head down. Didn't really say boo to a goose, which is probably surprising when you look at me and think I can't stop talking. But back then, she was amazing. She used to come in and I used to, you know, and then the second lady I worked for, who was the MD of a boutique catering company, she was phenomenal. Lizzie, you know, you were saying you look up to these people, you aspire to be like them. And then I literally had a series of consultants that became my mentors, which obviously, when I'm talking about it and sharing this with you now, led to me making the decision to become a catering consultant. And actually, you both hit on the point, you know, when you're looking at someone who is above you, the next role but one, or even is in the role that you aspire to be, if they spend time with you, then they will share with you the lessons that they've learned, the challenges that they've overcome, and almost help you form this can do. Well, if they've done it, then I can do. I can be a chef. I can be a board director. I don't know what you guys think.
Yeah.
As long as we're creating the right conditions for that, isn't it? That's the thing. It's so much about confidence, and particularly, I mean, emphasizing that, you know, this isn't all women, but if women have children and when they come back into the workplace, right, having someone who can support them, make them feel welcomed back, make them feel confident in returning to work, that is so important. But also ensuring that they have the conditions to achieve what they want to, right? You know, because if they don't have the kind of the flexibility, the allowances, the support to ensure that they're meeting their caring responsibilities, for example, then yeah, just making sure that they have both of those are there, right? Sorry, I'm rambling.
No, you're not. You're making total sense, because maybe what we need to do is just actually take the bull by the horns and approach every company, you know, I mean, you know, even go to all the contract caterers and say, look, you know, would you now start from 2024 building in, and it could be an hour a week where everyone, not just women, actually, you could apply this to anyone. And it's like just an hour of one-to-one mentoring a week would make a difference. And I've done counselling, say. I've had counselling before. 1 hour a week could make such a difference, because you'd sit down for 1 hour, carry on doing your day-to-day, and then it would give you the chance. To some, it might seem, well, that's not enough. But actually, it's actually, if you're just spending that 1 hour thinking about what you've maybe been through the previous week and looking ahead at how you can learn from that, and you're being mentored by someone who's maybe the next role above you, the next but one role above you, the leader within the business, imagine what a difference that could make. All the mistakes you'd save yourself from making, all that positivity that just by looking at someone who's occupying the role, which is probably why the reason you joined the industry in the first place, you know, if you had the one-to-one mentoring. I don't think there's enough of that going on, if I'm honest.
Yeah, agreed. I think it can also be, from a very simplistic psychological perspective, if there is such a thing as a simplistic psychological perspective. Is that an oxymoron? In any case, I'm finding this really, really interesting. You guys are getting me thinking all manner of interesting stuff. It's like a circuit breaker from your day to day. So, you know, at the end of the day, you come in, you do your the best work that you can, and you get busy, and you go home and you cook and you sleep, and then you rinse and repeat. Sometimes you need that circuit breaker to be able to kind of snap yourself out of that drift that naturally happens when you get into a routine like that. And the power that mentorship could play in that, especially being mentored by someone who is, as you said, is up the chain from where you want to be. I mean, mentorship in any form, I think, is really, really valuable, because it does get you thinking differently from perhaps where your natural thoughts would take you. But yeah, no, completely agree with that. The power of that is quite remarkable. Lizzie, when I say things like this, I always feel like I'm sounding condescending. But the youth view, in terms of, well, you're on a youth council, so really interesting to get your perspective on the next generations coming through and their voices and opinions on this kind of stuff. Because I think it's very easy for us to just get carried away with our own voices again. But what's the view with you guys?
I mean, yeah, being on the Youth Council, you speak to so many different people, and a lot of our focus kind of is on university students, people coming out of uni, kind of limited experience. They have a degree behind them, but then they've got to use it. And I think it is amazing that, like, in terms of my course, when I finished uni two years ago, it was predominantly female. And I think it is the willingness of people wanting to progress. And I think we're in such a time now where if you are a woman in business, you can absolutely progress. And that's mainly shown, you know, by role models and people in higher up positions. And I think it's just my opinion is it's just so exciting. And I think having seen the change, like you said, through history, literally in the past 100 years, yes, it might exceed our lifetime, but think about how much change can happen. And we've already made such progress. I really hope that one day there won't have to be the quotas that you have to meet for, like, your diversity and inclusion. It will just happen naturally because people will have leveled up and we will be on a level playing field. Yes, there'll be differences because, you know, we're different, have different biological things. But yeah, I'm just really grateful that I personally feel like I've never had an adverse experience because I'm a woman. And compared to a woman maybe 50 years ago, that would have been very different. Even like my mum, who worked in hospitality for most of her life, like, it just in one generation, you can see how much more opportunity we have, and how if I want to say I want to do something, the chances are I can do that. And I'm just really grateful to be in that position. And I think it's shared among other people, young people as well. Like, there's nothing stopping you, which is really nice.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, and you're obviously an optimist as well. And I don't mean that. Totally. I don't mean to say that as a kind of listen to you, you optimist. You know, at the end of the day, I believe that all problems are solvable through optimism. You know, so what you say is I find really, really wonderful to hear that is it's a general view. Of course, we can never really truly know. And equally, by the same token, you know, we can never really be perfect at this because none of us really know what perfect looks like in any case. But we can continue to working towards something. And I think hearing you say that around that's a view from what you're hearing amongst your peers gives me unbelievable hope that we are moving absolutely in the right direction.
Yeah, no, it's nice to kind of be among people. Like, if I was on a uni course and I was surrounded by men and they're all, you know, ambitious and want to do something, I'd feel a bit small. But it's so empowering being among people. Like, I have friends who finished uni at the same time with me doing amazing things now. And I'm just so proud of everyone that why can't we do anything we want to do? Yeah, it's really great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can I just say, it's so positive. Sorry for talking over you, Phil, but it's really encouraging because, you know, it's almost as though you speak a different language, you've got a different voice, and it's not tired and it's not dated. And I totally agree with the whole optimism. You know, it's a different world now. You know, we've gone through stuff. We don't even need to mention the words, but we've gone through stuff. And it's about coming out the other side and going, right, the world is ours for the taking. Let's just change it because we can.
Exactly, yeah. We have to be the positive change. Like, we can't sit back and be like, we can't do that because we're a woman.
Yeah.
Like, no. Why would we say that? Like, maybe 100 years ago you'd say that, but not now.
Yeah. It's good. Yeah,
absolutely. And I suppose equally from a male perspective, where, and I know in your business as an example, Lizzie, you've got one of the greatest men in the history of men at the helm in Danny Pecorelli.
He does that right, yeah.
Yeah.
In the history of men. Wow.
I was going to say, I feel like every time you introduce Danny, because I've listened to previous podcasts where you've introduced him, he's gone from like a legend to the best man in the history of men.
He's men of men, yeah. Wow.
Danny is the Roman Empire.
How you approach it in the next time you interview him. Where's he going to go from here?
Absolutely. But you know what? The thing about that is that that comes back to the point we were making about, you know, look to the people that inspire you. And he inspires me unbelievably. But I think bringing it back to our headline topic, what part do people like him play in ensuring, you know, that we continue to move this forward? Because I think the term used these days is ally, you know, and I would like to regard myself as one of them. Of course, I never get everything 100% right, but we do our best to ensure that we're also playing our part in moving stuff forward. So, yeah, what part do you guys see men playing in, you know, continued progress?
Yeah, I mean, just jumping into going back to Danny, like him being my managing director, like owner of the business, it definitely comes through the way he chooses to run Exclusive, in the way that he is an ally to women, absolutely. Like, the amount of female leaders we have, like in our senior leadership alone at my property, I'd probably say more than half are women, and like really amazing, like strong, powerful voices that they're always listened to and they feel very confident in the situation they're in. We have a new director of sales and marketing, Steph, who's been in the business for ages, and she is a powerhouse, and she's on the director's board because she deserves to be there. And Danny just wouldn't even bat an eyelid because he just wants to do the right by everyone, and he wants the right person for the role. And yeah, I think in Exclusive, our culture itself, there's not even an ounce of kind of adversity towards that in terms of how I've seen it so far and in the role models I see in my company, which is great.
Yeah, I just like to pick that up and just emphasize, yeah, that's so, so important. It's about listening to what the women around you in your business are telling you. It's supporting your female colleagues. It's ensuring that they feel able to kind of come to the table, bring their ideas, say what their needs are. And I think that's a huge thing. And I just also wanted to emphasize that, yeah, it's about listening to all women, because, you know, we talk about sort of women here, but we're not, you know, no one woman represents all women. We are not a homogenous group. Every woman will have different needs, especially, you know, when we're thinking intersectionally, you know, women with disabilities, women of color, every woman will have different needs depending on their individual situations. And so I think it's just so important to listen to what the women around you are telling you, what those individual women are telling you.
Yeah, a great point, because, you know, I suppose like everything, we mark everyone with the same brush, but in actual fact, the variation of circumstance and desire is different within each of us, you know, and even thinking about things like, you know, maternity packages and leave and all of that, which has historically been a problematic area for women to make progress in their career. Some women don't want to have children, you know, and so again, we can't mark this, everybody with the same brush. And equally, some women want to have children, but want to go straight back to work, whereas some men would go, actually, do you know what? I'll look after the kids and the dog. Thanks very much.
Exactly. These policies, these attitudes, this approach doesn't just, it's not just positive for women, it's positive for everybody. If we make sure that everyone feels able to make the decisions to progress in the way that is best for them, that improves the workplace for everybody.
I think, Kat, you've hit on a really good point. You said policy, and I think that's where, rather than it being about male leaders, it should be company policies. All company policies should be more geared around the role itself, and it shouldn't really matter who occupies it from a gender perspective or, you know, what have you, because you even look at menopause as well, and that affects, you know, a significant proportion of the population. And actually, if you look at us all as individuals, and you, even the four of us on this call right now, we've got a set of external circumstances that will define what we want and the shift patterns we want to work. And there'll be a mixture of all of those things. So maybe what we need to do is to, again, go back to the companies and the corporates, whether you're hotels, whether you're catering companies, whether you're restaurateurs, and just say, go back to your policy and start from the role itself, what's required to complete that role. And then, and be flexible, again, is that word, you know, about, you know, the type of person that could fulfill that. And it shouldn't be defined as a woman or a man, you know, because that's, you know, far too limiting today. And it should be about, you know, look at what shifts need to be undertaken to complete this role in its entirety, maybe. So it's rather than the men who occupy the senior leader roles within businesses, but more about, let's change the company's policy. You know, let's just start from, you know, from that perspective.
Yeah.
And putting those policies into practice as well, which I know you've written a lot about. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a generally great mindset to be in as a business anyway, is not to have this kind of staid mentality around, you know, that's what we've had in place and it's worked, so we're not going to change it. But actually it's about, you know, why can't we change? Like, you know, why let's just do it. And even if it doesn't work, who cares? We've tried it. You know, so you've got to, I suppose, have that continued flexibility in policy making. And equally, you know, I think a lot of policy, and this is not a subject for today because it's too vast, but, you know, policy making that happens at government level still has a massive part to play in terms of, you know, how much progress you can make as an individual or a business. So, yeah, it's an endlessly fascinating topic in any case. Kat, I just wanted to get your view to see if this is something which is on the agenda quite frequently in the UK, but do you get the same feeling in Switzerland or any of the other territories that you kind of cover?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I don't have any sort of, unfortunately, I did have a quick look around. I couldn't find any specific stats for you about Switzerland in particular, but in terms of the gender parity at leadership level, it's definitely still an issue over here. It's definitely something that's being looked at and being explored. I would just like to emphasize, and here's another, here, there is one stat for you I've got, that women in Switzerland, we didn't get the vote until 1971.
Jesus.
Right. Yeah. So just to give you an idea of, you know, it's, I think every country is very much dealing with their own kind of specific issues, specific policies, and how those are impacting women in the country. But I wouldn't say that the UK is
1971.
Yeah, 1971. I know.
Yeah.
It's not just a UK specific thing. I think I don't want to say every country, but certainly a lot of the European countries that I cover are grappling with very similar issues and very similar problems.
But don't forget, in 1913 in the UK, you were not even deemed people.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
I read that, I had to reread it. I was like, what? Again, maybe because of how outlandish that sounds, also then is a great demonstration of how far we've come. And rightly or wrongly, we should never have been there in the first place. But, you know, you can't, we have absolutely zero capability in dictating what happened back then. You know, all we can do is continue to try and affect our best foot forward. And I think there's definitely, there's enough will and there's enough positivity and optimism from certainly all the voices that we've had here today. And I hear many, many positive voices on this focus. So that's all we can do. We've just got to keep banging the same positive drum until it becomes so boring that people just go, oh, okay, then let's just do it. But there has to be willingness.
Yeah, I just also, you know, maybe it's worth saying we're humans as well. We make mistakes. You know, history is littered with mistakes. We're now at the stage where, you know, it's not a case of just carrying on using the same policies, using the same language when we write things, you know, using the same terminologies. You know, we've made mistakes and we've had to live by some of them, not good mistakes. And that's why statues are brought down, because today it doesn't fit with how we behaved historically. But we are humans, you know, we're designed to talk. We've evolved to this stage where we can communicate like this. And I think having a podcast, even with the four of us discussing this, has been really interesting, you know, because we do cover the ages, we do cover the eras. And it just goes to show that I think, you know, what you said is being optimistic and positive. I think it's a really exciting time to be in hospitality. And I do believe if we sit down and have this conversation in 10 years' time, the four of us, it will be massively different, and I think for the better.
Yeah. I just want to add to that. I really wish I could remember who wrote this, but I remember reading a quote in a book a few years ago where she said she hoped that her book and her attitudes in 50 years' time are really outdated, because it means that society has progressed. And yeah, that's just I thought that was a really
that's
good
great.
Quote. Yeah, I hope that what we're talking about now in 10, 20 years' time, we're so far ahead of this.
Absolutely. Lizzie, any final things to add before we wrap it up?
I think it's all been put across so wonderfully by Karen Tracy. But yeah, it's just having that positive outlook and just having the belief that we are the change, and being able to prove that what has happened in history is definitely history, and we should just look to the future and how we can put in place policies, have the guidelines for businesses to be better, and just hopefully kind of bring everyone up to a level where they want to be better as a business. And we see it happening all sorts of things in terms of like sustainability and how much that has grown over the past few years. And now it's the normal to be able to make your business sustainable. And it's the normal to have equal pay. We just need to make sure we're all at the right level, and we're just getting there. And I think the projection is good, hopefully.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and if there is anybody, any negative people out there listening to this who would want to come on a panel show and discuss, I'd love the negative view of this as well, because I think we're all four of us are quite optimistic about life in general here. So if there is a negative view out there, I'd love to engage on that as well. And negatives may be the wrong word, but in any case. But ladies, thank you so much for your time. You guys have been absolutely epic. I am sure that we could have gone on and on and on and spoken about this, because there's many other things that perhaps wanted to cover that we just don't have the time to do so. But maybe in itself is a reflection of that this is a vast topic. It's not going away, and it's moving forward, and there's so much yet to discuss. And there's so many things that need to happen. So, but yeah, thank you so much for your time and input. It's been absolutely brilliant.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Take care. Today's special covered International Women's Day with Lizzie Grundy, AIH, Kat Price, MIH, Tracy Fairclough, FIH, and hosted by me, Phil Street, FIH. A huge shout out to the IOH's very own Sonia Cresswell, MIH, for the artwork and branding, and Leon Williams, FIH, for the music. To say I'm in and feature on a future episode, contact phil.street@instituteofhospitality.org. And to find out more about the IOH or to join our hospitality family, please click the links in the show notes. Join us next time, where we'll be taking a look at retirement and beyond.